Hello again, everybody. Welcome to another exciting edition of the Big Red Bus as we take the glorious monstrosity out onto the streets of Chicago. I look to my right, and lo and behold, for the first time in a couple weeks, I guess, there's my buddy, the podfather, the great one, Doug Tonis. How you doing, brother?
I'm living the dream. You know, Fred, I got a funny story that's going to turn off all of our listeners right away. Sorry, guys. Yeah, every time we start the show, you say, I'm going to go 1, 2, 3, go, and then go, right?
Yeah.
Every time. We've done this like 500 times, right? Like every time you still, like, I know it.
That's what a professional does.
Yeah. And I make fun of you for it because I'm like, I know. So anyway, here's the funny corollary to this story. I was at this event and we were trying to record something. I'm down at U of I, and the amount of time it took to get everyone to figure out how to start and everything, I was like, oh my God, we need Fred here to give us a 1, 2, 3, go, and then go, just to like set the expectation, because it was like, I could not believe the inability for people to like figure out how to time this thing. And so, you know what? I have new respect for the 1, 2, 3, go. You say it every time, but it always gets everyone, like everyone's always in the right thing. Always double check, trust but verify. So you know what? I'm no longer going to give you a hard time about the 1, 2, 3, go after seeing someone, you know, fail in this task.
I'm so glad you've said this because the University of Northeast Idaho wants me to come out there and you know, teach a few classes on podcasting. And I'm going to spend the whole first semester just on the concept of 1, 2, 3, go, you know, to make sure everybody starts at the correct time to optimize the recording process. And everybody like gets on me too about like, oh, Fred, you take so long to post these. That's because Doug records at his house. I record at mine. And I listen to the entire podcast first to produce the best possible listen and avoid any of the, you know, there's always issues. Sometimes you'll cough, I'll cough. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So I'll scrub all that out. And there's just always an ambient sound. And I know people are like, well, it sounds awful. No, I think it's improved over the years. And I'm starting to become very good at it.
The funniest was, Doug,
I'm glad you finally realized my brilliance.
The funniest was, I think it was the last full one we did without a guest. And I forget what we were even like fighting about. Maybe it was Josh Giddey. And I listened to it and I was like, oh my God, I don't know how long it must have taken you to edit that, because we were screaming over each other like the whole time. I'm like, you had to spend hours. I felt so bad after listening to the final product. I'm like, oh my God, this guy was doing work to make it come out.
You have no idea how many times I've like cut out myself. I'm guilty of it probably more so than you, of me talking over you, or you know what I mean? So it just sounds awful when we do that. So I often like just will silence myself, and you got to run through the entire pod. Yeah. Regardless, most of the times it's delayed is because, you know, we both have full-time jobs and children that require our attention and a dog. And so like today I'm headed to Purdue after this afternoon. So this will, upon recording, this probably won't be up till the following day. But regardless, you know, hey, let's hit the ground running. Now that we've shown how the cheese is processed.
Let's go.
I don't know if you got a chance, DT, to see my appearance with the CHGO guys this week. I was honored with a request to join them. And I will say, that facility in the West Loop is incredible. Those guys are awesome. Obviously, Big Dave is, we go way back, and Matt Peck, and you know, obviously the GOAT, Will Gottlieb, three of the greatest guys, you know, in the history of podcasting. And then obviously their producer, Joey Spathis, who's an awesome dude. Awesome dude. I just love going down there, and that whole facility and the podcasts that they produce are awesome. I do feel lucky that we're part of this kind of community for Bulls podcasts. There's so many good ones out there. I listen to all of them. But my two favorite, I would probably have to say, are the Bulls Talk, which is in potential jeopardy now with the ending of the NBC Sports Chicago, and the CHGO one are probably my two favorites outside of what you and I produce. What say you?
We should definitely try and poach Casey Johnson. You know, he's a free agent.
I've already done that. I've already sent a request to our mutual friend Kevin Anderson. Hey, is there any way you guys want to join the Big Red Bus as a regular contributor? But I think what's going to happen, I suspect, is from what I understand, is he's already going to be. Oh, he already announced that, right? He's joining
the new network.
Yeah. Bummed to see Will's not on that. Will Perdue. But, you know, hopefully we can do some stuff. I have this idea, and I'd love to get everybody's feedback. I want to do a show with Kevin Anderson and Marque from Australia. I think that'd be a good combo. But and maybe we can get them under our umbrella here as we start growing and exploring new paths.
Yeah, good luck with that. I wish you well.
Okay, thanks a lot.
You know, like, whatever. I would love to talk with Kevin or Mark, both cool guys. So I'm down. But yeah, we've been doing this show now for like a decade, and I think we've got 400 users. So I don't know how long the path of growth is, but I don't think it's
a big
money maker. Like, I've yet to get my paycheck, so
Well, we haven't tried to monetize it yet. Maybe one day we'll do that.
No, I don't think
that will probably be the path. That will be the path we'll have to go if we want to bring in a talent like Casey Johnson. But yeah, let's move on to the more topics at hand.
Sure.
Anyhow, on that show, did you see it? Did you see my comments on that show?
We rambled for 3 minutes. No, I did. I did not see the show.
Great.
I saw you post it. I was like, I should check this out, but I've not. I had a moment about it.
This seems to be a constant refrain of I did something and you missed it. I don't know why that
I don't really follow you. I mean, what do you think? You're my child or something? Like, I got to be invested in everything you do? Like, I responded to your Twitter. I mean, what else would... I mean, that's pretty good, I think.
You might have seen on Twitter then that... you know, they cut a certain segment of that show where Matt set me up with a question regarding the growing movement for the boycott of the Chicago Bulls and all their games, et cetera, that has, I've stated multiple times, irritated me greatly with the request that I stop going to games and stop caring, essentially, because of the negative turn. I'd love to get your feedback on that. If everybody wants to see my comments, it's available on Twitter. I retweeted it. Follow me there. I can get into the gist of it later. But I'd first like to hear your opinion on, you know, I guess what I said, because I think you did see that segment.
Yeah.
And what's your also comments on the general movement to boycott the Chicago Bulls?
Well, I also replied to that thread on Twitter. But just to repeat, like what? I don't care. If you're a fan and you want to boycott it, go ahead. Do whatever you want with your dollars and your time. Like, it's not for me to judge what you do as a fan. If you think it's going to have an impact, though, no. I mean, it's just also giving them a ton of money is not going to have an impact. Like, it just isn't. You as a fan are not going to have an impact on the Bulls' direction. You're a fan. You watch, that's it. Like, that's your role in this thing. You can talk about it. You can complain about it on social media. You can cheer for them on social media. You can do whatever you want. But if you think you're going to change the outcome of the team, you're not. That's just the cold, hard truth of it. And so, yeah, whatever. I don't care. If you want to boycott, do your thing. Just don't think it's going to have an outcome. But it's not. And if you want to convince other people to do a thing, this seems like really low stakes. Like, if I had the power to convince tens of thousands of people to do things, boycotting the Bulls like wouldn't be my number one social cause I'm gonna aim at. Like, I just would have other things I think are more important on my list if I could spend the time to influence tens of thousands of people. Lots of political issues I might address first. So I always think it's a weird take, but it, you know, just to me just shows the emotionality people have about the topic, right? People are really hurting that they get to this point where they feel they want to take some desperate measure. Like, if you're someone who is in that boat, I mean, I would say you're probably not going to do anything, but I can say I also believe you that you care a lot, you know, and someone who doesn't want to boycott them doesn't care less, though. They just maybe realize this is not an effective strategy and they would just enjoy the team.
Yeah, and I think, what's the end game? Let's, like, nobody shows up. What do you think is going to happen? Let's just go with your plan. What do you think would happen, Doug, if nobody showed up to Chicago Bulls games for a year?
Well, like I said, I think they would just make desperate moves to be average. Like, if you think, like, Jerry Reinsdorf is really cheap and only cares about profits and profits are down, like, what do you think he's going to do if he's desperate? Just go look at what they did 4 years ago. We're like in a youth movement, you know, you're trying to find a star player, you're collecting draft assets, you're doing whatever. And then, oh, wow, people are mad. There's billboards out. Let's get desperate and make a bunch of short-term moves that, you know, and we see what happened.
Yeah, well, I think what would happen is a lot of people in the organization be laid off and fired, and Jerry's going to be just fine.
Jerry's going to be fine for sure. I mean, he's like 85 and has like billions of dollars. Like, he's going to be fine.
And
he's
his son will be fine. They have generational
wealth.
Everyone
in their family will be fine. There's not a, you know, at any rate, like I said, you just, it doesn't matter, because if someone is bad at what they do, you know, them becoming more desperate is not going to make them better at what they do. Like, if people think, like, if I just turn up the heat on this situation, like, it's going to get better. Like, I mean, generally, no. And especially no when people are already trying, right? Like, I don't think the Bulls are successful, but, like, there's this whole theory, like, ah, they don't care, they're not trying. Like, come on. Like, if you really sat down and talked with AK, do you think he doesn't want the team to win? Like, that he's not losing sleep? Like, John Paxson lost all his hair managing the Bulls. Like, this guy clearly cared a lot. Like, and I've talked with John Paxson, you know, a bunch of times, and Gar Foreman, and like back in that era when I was had media access, and I've never talked with AK or Mark Eversley because I'm just not that close anymore. But those guys cared super deeply about it. Like, if you actually were face to face with them and you just want to be like, oh, you don't care, like you would just feel so embarrassed of yourself for like thinking that. Like it's all they do. It's all they think about all day. That doesn't make them good at what they do. But like amping up the pressure, like they're not like just not paying attention and being lazy. Like people have these like weird thoughts like that's true. It's just not true. Like they might be bad at what they do, like any of these guys, like ignoring the individual. They might be bad. They might need to be let go. But amping up the pressure is not going to make them better. Amping up the pressure might help in a scenario where like they just aren't, no one's working and no one's doing what they're supposed to do. And you got to light a fire to get them working a little bit. But that's not the case. Like in any of these orgs, like it just isn't. That's not the case. Amping up the pressure is not gonna do anything.
Again, in the end game is if they sell it, they're gonna sell it to another really wealthy individual. Unless it's Michael Jordan, I'm probably not gonna feel extremely fond about whoever they sell it to. And even if they do sell it to Michael, he hasn't actually proven himself as a great owner in Charlotte. Yeah. It's an owner. Like, of course, are they gonna be really likable people? I would argue that. In Chicago, the best owner, and it's not even close, is the Chicago Cubs owner.
The Ricketts family.
The Ricketts family have been, to me, clearly the best owners in the city. They're the only people running a team that haven't taken public money. What they've done for Wrigley out of their own profits has been, and I was there this past week, is amazing. We used to stay in the city as a family. Every summer, we used to go down to a hotel and just hang out in the city. We kind of stopped that practice maybe 5-10 years ago, but I was amazed at how many people would come in a hotel and go see a Cub game. There was just people everywhere from across the country. The Cubs pour money through taxes into the city, and they're the only group that didn't take any financing. We got the Bears begging for massive public financing to build a stadium. Give me a break. Like, there's financial apocalypse about to happen in the city if you pay attention to where we're at financially. And you want some, you know, $1 billion for a stadium for, you know, 6-8 games or 10 games, depending if you get to the playoffs. Come on, give me a break. The Cubs have been way better than anyone. Yet, is he liked? Are they liked? No. They're owners. So, I don't know. I find this whole conversation a little ridiculous. If that's the way you're going to be, you should be that way with every team. And I don't see that with the Bears. The Bears haven't won a playoff game since 2011.
Oh, come on. People have been rooting for the McCaskies to sell the Bears too. Like, for sure.
I don't. You've heard a lot of it this year.
I mean, this year there's excitement. Is it just a reaction when things are bad? People say that.
Yeah.
Like, so fair. When the Bears are bad, people like are on that bandwagon all the time. And now that Caleb Williams and Roma Dunze and the team looks good, you know, or at least before the season. Now maybe
they do.
There's already some panic setting in. But before the season, when there was a lot of hype and people thought the team was going to look really good. You know, those voices weren't there. So at any rate, like I agree. If Reinsdorf were to sell the team, there's some chance they'd get a better owner, and there's some chance they'd get, you know, a worse or the same owner. And, you know, it just kind of depends who buys it. Like if Jeff Bezos bought the Bulls, I'd be pretty amped, you know, but like the odds are like probably not going to happen.
I'd rather have an owner though. If you look at like the Carolina Panthers, that guy's a meddling idiot and it's obviously ruined the entire franchise. I think in general, Reinsdorf's kind of the guy who's going to hire somebody and let them do their job for the most part. Obviously, there were some over the years, especially when you look at the Kyle Korver situation, I think there were probably some.
You just want someone to pump more money in, right? Like Reinsdorf is not someone who wants to pump a lot of money in it. He runs it like a business. You would love someone who runs it like a fan, but also doesn't meddle, right? So You effectively want someone who's willing to take a long view and be loyal and let the basketball people do the basketball things. And Jerry Reinsdorf does that, which is good. But you want someone who's also like, I'm going to be willing to pay. And Jerry Reinsdorf doesn't do that, right? Like, I'm not trying to fool anyone and say Reinsdorf is an amazing owner. Like, yeah, you would never, if we were the Golden State Warriors and Jerry Reinsdorf owned them, like how many rings do you think they'd have? When that like luxury tax bill climbed up to like $150 million. Like, so, you know, you'd have less rings. So I think in that sense, you'd love someone who just has deeper pocketbooks. And that's why I said Jeff Bezos, right? Unlimited pocketbooks. Yeah, he just has so much money, it doesn't matter. And then he's also very operationally oriented and shown through Amazon. Like, he's a guy who's like, yep, I'm now over my head here. I'm going to hire good people. I'm going to, you know, let them do their
and let them run it, not meddle. Yeah, like, exactly.
Yeah, unlike, say, like Elon Musk is like, oh, yeah, I have a lot of money and I'd probably pump in a lot of money. But then he would be the guy who also meddles and thinks he knows more than everyone in the room and then just does like wild off the wall shit. Like, so, anyway, man, this is 16 minutes of like nothing related to the Bulls. We've really set the bar.
Well, it's kind of related, but yeah, I just want to get your opinion on that since it is kind of like a flashpoint. I've received a ton of comments, pro and negative, on it. But overall, I kind of, my experience with those guys is always great. And I realized it when I was driving in, kind of thinking about what I was going to say. I think this is one of the worst off seasons in Bulls history in terms of looking at the direction you're going in. I'm constantly flustered and frustrated with this idea. I highlight this fact. Out of the top 20 teams, there's 20 teams that make the playoffs and the play-in. 19 of those 20 teams were top 20 in three-point percentage. It's a metric which indicates success in today's NBA. The Bulls were 20th. The only team to make the playoffs that was not in the top 20 in three-point percentage was the Orlando Magic. They were 22nd. Nine out of the bottom 10 teams in three-point percentage did not make the playoffs. It's like, maybe we should devote some resources to getting better at that very important skill. And what did we do? We traded our best three-point shooter. Understandably so. You know, obviously Caruso is not in the long-term plans for a guy who in Giddey who can't shoot the three. Hopefully he'll get better at that. Let's not debate that move specifically. But what did we do to get better at shooting? What did we do to get better at rim defense and in interior defense? It's,
why do you think we're going to be better? Why do you think why do you think that was the goal? Like, the goal was not to put the best team on the floor this year, right?
Yeah, but
like, that wasn't the goal. So like, you saying like, oh, well, now we're not going to make the playoffs. Yeah, no shit. They're not trying to make the playoffs this year.
Are they, though, Doug?
I don't know. It's hard to say. But like, they clearly made a youth movement. Like, the main goal was not to maximize wins this year. The moves they made were not to maximize wins this year. So like, I'm sure they're still going to try to get as many wins as they can. But their main goal was not to maximize wins. It was to get younger. You know, try to transition from the last plan to whatever the new plan is going to be. And I think that was a failure. I'm not saying this was a great offseason, but that, like, the points you're making would be really valid points if you were trying to put together a really good team this year. But I don't think that was really the goal. I think the goal was, we know the team we have has hit a dead end. We've got to try to find a way to reset, and we've got to try to find a way to get younger and shift things. And so that was the goal. And so, yeah, I don't think the offseason moves like enhanced our chances of winning, but I don't think anyone thought that. And I don't think that was the problem.
I hope you're right. I don't believe it to be so. And the microcosm of this argument comes to two players. I think we're both in agreement that if you're talking about maximizing wins, Craig is the better answer than Dale Terry or Bezelis. Would you concur with that?
Yeah, probably.
And if we're talking about development, then obviously Dale Terry and Bezelis are better answers than Craig.
I think that's true with Bezelis. I don't think that Terry is a meaningful enough. Like, you've seen enough of him to feel like he's not going to develop into anything.
That's our opinion. I don't believe the front office views it that same way.
Well, we'll see if they play him. Yeah. Like, if they don't play him, you can't say, well, it's my opinion that Terry is not someone you need to develop, and then also at the same time say, well, they played Craig over Terry, so that shows they're not developing people. They could also recognize that Terry is not a guy who they're going to prioritize developing, because the odds of him developing into anything meaningful are so low, it's irrelevant.
That's going to be the indication to me. Like, are we all simpatico in the front office and the head coach that this is a year for development, or this is a year for maximizing wins? I suspect we're going to see Craig in the lineup And that means that this team is all about maximizing wins. And if
I don't think it's black or white. You're painting it black or white. Okay. Like Bozelas is going to play. Do you think he's going to play?
I don't.
You don't think he's going to play? He's going to have zero minutes.
Terrible shooter. No, I think he'll get some time. I don't think he'll be in a rotation.
How many minutes a game do you think he'll play?
To start out the season, I predict in the first month he will.
At the end of the year. At the end of the year, do you think he'll play in over 60 games? So like basically be a regular in the rotation?
No, I don't.
Okay. So you think you don't think he's going to be a regular in the rotation?
No, I don't think he's going to be in a rotation to start the season. I think he'll eventually be there.
I'm not talking about the season. I'm saying over the course of the whole season as a whole, I think he will be a regular rotation player.
Okay. I hope you're right.
So we disagree on that one. Yeah. And I agree if Bozelas doesn't play, that is a sign that you're not trying to develop people. Like, because Bozelas is going to be terrible, like out the gates. And, you know, so, but you have to play him for him to get better. And if they refuse to play him.
Do you agree that 29% or below from 3-point range is terrible?
Yeah, sure.
Well, why would you believe he's going to shoot better than 29% from three all of a sudden? He hasn't done it in summer league.
I don't. I just told you he was going to be terrible. What are you saying?
Okay, good. Well, I agree with you. I want him to play.
I said Bozelas is going to be terrible and they're going to play him anyway.
Okay.
Like I don't, and I now you're right. Now you're arguing with me. Like, yeah, I think he's going to be awful to start off with, and you got to play him to get him to be less awful. I mean, yeah, I don't expect his 3-point shot to be magically fixed. And, you know, his ball handling was okay and he can made some flashy plays, but I think he needs to be on the court to get used to the speed of the game. And I think that'll happen.
I hope you're right. And we'll find out pretty early on. But I also see a scenario, and I think this is the more likely one, that Coby White takes another little jump and we get some nice play from Giddy and they start out the year a little bit better than expected. And you don't see Bozelas or any of the young players. You get a lot of Craig and a lot of the vets playing, you know, significant minutes. Maybe even Lonzo Ball, who knows? I mean, that's another one. Lonzo Ball, he's not in our future. Why should he? I mean, it's a great story and all that, and he seems like a great kid. But my goodness, if he's in a rotation, what are we doing? Like, he's not in the future for this.
Well, I think Lonzo Ball can be as important to our future as Julian Phillips or Dalen Terry.
Explain. What do you mean?
I mean, all of them basically are 0% chance.
Okay.
0%. Like, I mean, I got you. There's no reason to think any one of those three guys is going to be a meaningful player at any point ever. And so if any of them does, like, yeah, okay, maybe there's some chance Lonzo comes back, plays okay, and you sign him to a new deal, like a cheaper one with whatever protections. Like, the odds of that working out don't strike me as any lower than the odds of Dalen Terry or Julian Phillips becoming a meaningful player. Like, those guys, like, what have you seen from those guys that makes you think, like, oh, yeah, they're going to be any good?
Dalen Terry, like, absolutely.
There's nothing. There's no reason to think those guys are going to be any good. Yeah, like Lonzo Ball, I mean, he had all this weird injury stuff. But it's like if his knee suddenly holds up, like, he's a really good player. Like, I don't think that's going to happen. Like, just to be clear, I do think the odds are basically zero. But if it did happen, and you'd see that in practice, right? If all of a sudden Lonzo was playing really well, like, you already know he's a great player in the NBA. Like, he's a top 100 player in the NBA. And so if by some miracle his knee is good, like, I don't know, like, is that a bigger miracle than Dalen Terry going from, like, out of the league caliber to being a good player? Like, I don't know. I don't know why I'd say Lonzo's knee being fixed after three surgeries is lower odds than that. Like, they're both just low odds. So, but Lonzo, you'd be able to see it right away, right? Like, if all of a sudden he's kicking guys' ass in practice, then you already know you have a good player. And, you know, so I guess it. I don't think any of them are going to happen, but if Lonzo was playing well, I'd be fine letting him play.
I brought this point up on the show, and I think we may have talked about it briefly in a previous episode, but I do want to get a little bit clearer take on it if you just bear with me with an explanation. Let's say that we go to camp. I think we're both in agreement, and I talked with Mark Chanowski about this. Like, this idea that Zach LaVine is going to come off the bench for the Chicago Bulls if he's still on the roster is insane. Like, that is not going to work. We all know Zach's one of the best two players on his team. And I think it's in everyone's interest that we're somehow able to move him. The best way to move him is have him start and play well. Do you agree?
Yeah, agreed.
All right. So he's going to be starting. That means that Giddey will probably start. I mean, it's clear they brought him in here. They traded their best asset. But let's say, hypothetically, I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility that Io outperforms, significantly outperforms, and plays better than Giddey in camp. I think you can make the argument, due to Io's excellent defense, that he would probably be a better fit while Zach is still on the roster with this team than Giddey as a starter. But do you feel that would be a mistake, number one, if you started Io ahead of Giddey? And number two, what are the odds of that happening, even if Io does outplay him?
I don't think Io has any chance of starting over Giddey, regardless of what happens.
Okay.
And I think the guy he should start over is Kobe White.
Oh, man.
I mean, Kobe White and Zach are just, like, highly duplicative. And you'd be better off having their time being separated as much as possible.
I don't think I've ever disagreed with you more. I think Kobe White's a way better player than Josh Giddey. I think he.
You don't think that they're duplicative?
I think Kobe White has much higher ceiling in terms of being a playmaker and passer than Zach. I don't think Zach's.
I don't think that's true. Much higher ceiling? Like, Kobe White doesn't have.
Kobe White's a better player.
Kobe White doesn't have great court vision. He doesn't have great ball handling. He doesn't get into the.
Kobe White?
He doesn't draw like double teams.
What? What are you talking about? Kobe White, are you serious?
He doesn't do all those things. Not at like an NBA like point guard level. Like, not like compared to Zach LaVine. I don't think that Kobe White gets into the paint better than Zach. He sure as hell doesn't finish better than Zach. He doesn't draw more coverage than Zach.
Well, I'm not comparing him to Zach. I'm comparing him to Josh Giddey.
I'm comparing him to Zach because I just said their role is very duplicative. They're like guys who aren't starting point guard caliber in terms of point guard things. They're guys who are like shooting guards. Can put up a lot of points, can score in a lot of ways, can do a lot of different things. Like, they're like decent at passing, ball handling, like all of those things. But like, Kobe White has nowhere near Josh Giddey's passing ability or court vision.
Yeah, but you don't need it. First of all.
Well, but next to someone like Zach, like,
Okay, do you agree that Kobe White, let's address each question. Do you agree that Kobe White has far more gravity than Josh Giddey? I don't think this is debatable, Doug. Come on. It's easy answer.
Sorry, say that again.
Kobe White has far more gravity than Josh Giddey. Teams are more concerned about him further out than they are about Josh Giddey. There's no debate about this, right? You agree with that? Oh, come on.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. Standing on the three-point line, yeah. Like, if Josh Giddey is like an off-ball player, I think that's true, for sure. As an on-ball player, like, once Giddey starts going into the lane, like, there's examples where, like, no one's paying attention to him at the three-point line because he can't shoot. And as an off-ball player, like, 100%, not even close. As an on-ball player, though, I think Giddey has as much threat, like, once he starts going in the paint as Kobe White does.
According to the video I've seen. And I could direct you to some video. There's no way in the world the Suns would ever think of getting away with guarding Yusuf Nurkić on Kobe White. They did that against Josh Giddey. So that just flies in the face with reality.
All right.
But that said, my general point is here. I think that Kobe White, let's look at the last three teams that won a title. This is the Boston Celtics. Do they have a traditional point guard who's a great passer? The answer is no. Right? You agree? Jrue Holiday is not a traditional point guard. Josh Giddey's a better passer than Jrue Holiday. The year before that, who won it the year before was, of course, the Denver Nuggets.
I agree with you. I don't want to go through like 10 minutes of you just trying to name teams slowly without looking you up. So I agree with you generally. I don't know that you need a pass first point guard, which is, I think, all you're really driving.
Yeah, you don't.
I think Kobe White and Zach LaVine are a horrific fit next to each other. I think they do the exact same things, and they're going to want the ball in the same places. They're going to take the same type of shots. They're going to like not be natural complements to each other. And you're going to need what Kobe White does or Zach LaVine does on the bench. You're going to want one of those two guys in 100% of the minutes. Like 100% of your minutes, you want one of those two guys playing. And that's going to be a lot easier to do if one of them comes off the bench and the other starts. And Josh Giddey is going to complement both of those guys better than they complement each other. So anyway, that's it. Like, look, we talked about before. You disagree, it's fine. I don't die on the hill, but I think our best starting lineup, knowing for sure that the Bulls are going to start Giddey because of the trade they made, and there's going to be all this political stuff about him, would be Giddy, Zach, and Io would be the three I would start. And then probably Pat and Jalen Smith would be like the other guys I would throw in there initially. But I don't think we're going to do that. I think we're going to start Giddy, Kobe, Zach, probably Pat and Vooch. Like, I think that's what we will do. So that is what it is. I think that's just, it's going to be worse with like Io coming on the bench. And then, yeah, if you balance lineups, it's okay. Like, but you got to find a way to keep one of Kobe and Zach on the floor at all times, I think. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, absolutely. Because those are
two best players. Want one of those two guys always on the floor because they're your two best scorers.
Yeah.
You always want a threat of someone who can score. So, you know, and the easiest way to do that is to not start them together. But it's not to say you can't accomplish it. You could pull one of them like earlier, let the other run for 8 minutes and then sub one for the other and, you know, keep their minutes about the same and start them both. I mean, I'd probably close with both of them too. You know, in the closing parts, you just see what you want to do. It's a little different.
You know, last year at this time, there was a ton of talk about working the offense through Vucevic in the high post and using his considerable skills as an offensive facilitator. I'm talking sarcastically here, but do you feel like that's still going to be a goal this organization is to kind of, and because I'm a little unclear how that would work. Like, where does Vooch work?
God, I hope not. I mean, he was so bad last year. Like, I hope after last year, they're just like, yeah, this is a bad idea. Like, I hope they just realize this guy is dead weight. I mean, I don't know if they will, but I hope they do. Can I step back 1 second?
Yeah.
What do you think about this just as a thought? Start Giddy, Kobe, Zach, Io, and then a center.
Oh, I would love that, but
pull Pat for Io. Like, I don't know. I don't think we have good rebounding guards. Like, Giddy's a really good rebounder. Io is a good rebounder. Zach's actually a pretty good rebounder. And then, like, Vooch would be a good rebounder if you kept him in there. Like, I don't think you get killed on the glass doing that. And I trust Io to defend a power forward as much as Pat. Like, I think there's nothing more overrated than Pat's defense. I think that would be interesting.
I kind of disagree about Pat's defense. I think he got a lot better, especially as a one-on-one defender. And I agree with you, like, as a team defender, he's not great.
Well, that's the most important part. The most important part is the team defense part, not the one-on-one part. But I agree with you. Like, one-on-one, I think he's fine. Like, I think he's a little overrated there, but I think he's good. Like, he's one of the better guys on the team as a man defender. But he's so clueless off the ball. Like, the second the ball is not in front of him, he just doesn't know what he's doing. He's late on every rotation. He's never in the right spot. And that kills your defense way more than putting a poor one-on-one defender in there.
Yeah. I just think he's a better answer against, like, some of the better wings in the East. Like, I'd rather see Pat on Giannis. I'd rather see Pat on Tatum.
If you got someone who's going to ISO all the time, I'm with you. Like, someone, like, who's going to get the ball and go to work from that position. And then the primary focus is going to be who he's defending one-on-one. I think it's fine.
I think a lot of what ails us in terms of this lineup and the potential issues around it will be solved as soon as they move Zach. You know, like, I mean, then you just put it.
Well, it'll be solved and the team will probably be worse. Like, yeah.
Right? Well, yeah. Yeah, agree. Like, I think Zach's a great player.
Well, we'll solve the problem with minutes by making our team way worse.
That's the goal, man. I want to be.
But we won't worry about minutes anymore. Then everyone will be in their natural state. And then we'll be seeing how high an upside a Kobe, Io, Giddy, Pat, Jalen Smith lineup is. And I have a spoiler alert for you. Not very high.
I was driving the other day. I will admit, like, speaking of Williams, you know, we're both in agreement on him. We think he's a fine role player, but I think it was the GOAT was talking about how great his December was. And he shared his stats. Doug, hold on your seats. 14 points per game, 4 assists. 14 points per game, 4 rebounds, 1 assist. And I was like, what? Are we not? Listen to yourself. That's what we're celebrating? That was his good month? I mean, like, give me a break. Holy cow. Is this the most overrated?
In 4 years.
It's so great.
In 4 years. That was peak Pat.
14-4-1. You know,
maybe to be a little bit.
Whoa.
To be a little bit fair. I'll just say, like, it was at least the most recent data, right? Like, the most recent data is always the most valuable data.
Mm-hmm.
And then Pat got hurt. And so, like, if you want to be a teeny bit fair, I do think it's not entirely nuts to say, hey, look, Pat was starting to turn the corner. But there wasn't enough evidence to say whether he's really going to turn the corner. And then you're still now stuck in this, like, boat now where, like, well, how healthy is he?
Yeah.
You know, like, he had this foot surgery. He wasn't ready in July. And whatever, they threw out the Lonzo Ball like quotes of like, oh, he'll be ready 100% for camp. I have no pain, whatever. Like all the stuff they said last summer with, or 2 summers ago with Lonzo. And then it was like, oh yeah, no, none of that was true.
Yeah, it's been radio so, silence whatever, that, since. That's always a good sign for the Chicago Bulls when there's no discussion at all about what's going on.
There's no workout videos leaking of like Pat dunking all over people. You know, like if things are really great, you would normally see that like PR hype train.
Yes.
Of like, oh, here's Pat working with guys. And there's been nothing. Like the last comments I saw were in July, where I think Casey Johnson had, you know, said something like, yeah, Pat's camp says he's running and jumping and feeling no pain and everything is great, which good update, right? Like that sounds all positive. But yeah, now it's been 2 months and you've not seen a single thing. Like, you know, and you just would kind of expect to see something by now.
Absolutely.
Like, doesn't mean it's bad, but you would just like whatever. I've seen a bunch of Lonzo Ball clips like floating around. Like it's just a little weird that you've not seen anything for a guy who, you know, maybe needs to prove himself. But again, it doesn't mean it's bad. It's just, you know, I have a little bit of concern till proven otherwise.
We haven't seen anything on a guy that was hurt.
A little bit of concern until we see it.
I'm going to predict it right now. I don't think he'll be ready to start the season. That's my prediction.
If he is, that's a disaster.
What?
If what you say is correct, phrase that poorly. If you are correct, that's a disaster. If this guy was not healthy in July and you proactively signed him while he was a restricted free agent to like top of the market money without making him negotiate a contract while he was injured and couldn't play, and you didn't have even like full confidence in his health, like he was supposed to be fully healed before they signed him and he wasn't. Like he's behind schedule. It's just a complete disaster. It shows our management's complete unwillingness to like let the market dictate anything.
I agree. And that was my point too. Like everybody, first of all, there were very few teams that could even sign him, right? And I always mention this. Look how the Cavs played hardball with Isaac Okoro, who had a better year than Williams. And they got him on their terms. They got him on a 3-year deal, just signed last week. I think it was like 13 a year. Compare and contrast to how the Bulls handled this negotiation with an injured Patrick Williams, who had overall had a crappy season, in my opinion, or at best average. And they give him a 5th-year player option. Just insanity. Insanity. And like, listen, you're worried about the Charlotte Hornets and you're worried about the Pistons offering Patrick Williams $25 million a year? Really? That's what you're worried about when both those teams have to sign very good players to max deals in the next couple of years? You really think that's what they're going to offer Patrick Williams? That's in their plan? And I looked it up. The Charlotte Hornets have been offered a restricted free agent contract to a player outside of their org in like a decade. The Pistons haven't done it for 6 years. That was like for Norland's Noel in 2018. It's like, It's so unlikely and so impossible to happen. RFA is a hammer every team should use. And the Bulls just didn't. They treated it like it was a red carpet or something. It was a joke, you know. But
yeah, it's just guys they like versus guys they don't like, right? That's all it comes down
to. Yeah.
They like Patrick Williams. They believe in him regardless of everything that's happened. And so.
And they didn't like
if
Kobe.
They like you, then they.
They didn't like Kobe. So they negotiated him. In a fashion,
they negotiated with Kobe early. They also negotiated with Kobe early. Kobe also got top of market relative to the season he had the year before. Like the difference with Kobe is Kobe's contract when he signed it was not like some great deal, like right away. What made it a great deal is everything Kobe did after he signed the contract. You know, he showed tremendous improvement. And the same with Io. Like Io, the year before he signed that deal, his performance was like kind of near like replacement player vet minimum. You know, he shot the ball really poorly, but then he signed this deal and then he was amazing. Now, like, look, you and I both love Io. We both liked Kobe. You like Kobe more than me, but we both liked Kobe. We both thought those guys were set to improve more. But they both got like top of market deals.
I didn't think those were top of market deals. I felt like Kobe played really well.
Go look at their stats relative to how much they paid. Those are top of market deals.
Maybe you're right. I thought Kobe played really
Great deals now. Like I'm not trying to say, but they were not like when they signed him, Like the year before, like Iowa was shooting like 29% from three and barely any points and like whatever. And Kobe, like statistically, in a lot of ways, the worst year of his entire career. You know, I think we both saw improvement in like all of the intermediary stuff, like his ball handling was better. You know, like the stuff that wasn't showing up in the box score, you could see improvement. His defense was better. And so we both thought he was going to make a step forward. And I think you were really on top of like, he's going to make a huge step forward. I thought he was going to make maybe a more iterative step forward, but we both thought he was going to get better, and it showed a lot of progress and was in a bad position because they clearly didn't like him, right? They didn't like him and they didn't give him a chance. And only when he started playing well towards the end of the season did they actually give him minutes to prove he could play well. So we both liked him, but the total numbers were like very low, you know, like for a guy who signed what he signed for, they were not like, I don't know what he averaged that year. It was like probably like 9-10 points, few assists. Like it wasn't a great year by Kobe standards compared to even previous years.
Yeah.
So,
well, this is the third straight year that they brought in another guard to be the primary ball handler ahead of Kobe White. So it's clear they don't believe in him. I mean, 3 years ago, they brought in Gordon Dragic. 2 years ago, they brought in Javon Carter. And then this year, they bring in, you know, Josh Giddey as the primary ball handler. And, you know, my counter to all this is I don't think Kobe was the problem as the primary ball handler. I think the issue was far more with their three-point shooting, and their interior defense was an abomination.
Well, Kobe wasn't the solution, maybe, but he wasn't the problem. And that's really the problem with the Bulls is they don't have a guy who's a solution, which in the end, I just mean they don't have the top end talent.
Yeah.
And, you know, Josh Giddey is not going to solve that problem, but neither was anyone else you traded Alex Crusoe for. Alex Crusoe was not going to get you a top end talent guy. Like just so whatever, like this gets back into a lot of other things I don't think we want to cover again, but I will say generally this regime has, we'll say, crapped on any of the guard packs guys they inherited. And then they've not evaluated everyone from a neutral stance. Like they got rid of all these guys, treated them poorly, and then they've treated their own guys in this totally different way. Like there's no accountability for like how Vucevic has played. There's no accountability for how Pat Williams has played. You know, they didn't bring in like a ton of great guys to compete for start power forward with Pat Williams, right? Despite the fact that he was poor and he was hurt. You know, we never spent more than the vet min. Most of the guys that competed against him were like 6'5 shooting guard, small forward combos. Like they never brought a legitimate power forward in ever.
Yeah. Green.
And
yeah,
you know, like, just exactly. like you said, that's not the same with Kobe White, where they repeatedly spent money to try and get someone different than him. And, you know, like all of that money was wasted. Like we got Javon Carter on this contract. So definitely from they value the things they've done very highly.
Great point.
And they just
look who they brought in to compete with Patrick Williams, Javonte Green and Craig. They traded away Thad Young, and you know, basically they've just cleared out every potential competitor, legitimate competitor at the four, and he's been beaten out basically by Javonte Green and Craig over
Derek Jones Jr.
Multiple years. So great job there.
Yeah.
Hey, let's bring the bus in before I get too depressed as we continue this conversation. Now we're finally going to get to some news. And gosh, we got the media day coming up very quickly. So we're going to get this bus roaring and have some legitimate topics.
We had Caitlin Clark on the our list of topics.
Oh, I'm done talking about that anymore. I can't.
I mean, that would have been just our best episode ever. We would have gotten like, I was so looking forward to just having like an absolute mob of like weird people like insult me for saying something afterwards. Like it was going to be great. Like,
yeah, it'll be a lot of fun. I will say, would have been
crazy.
What an incredible, insane year. If you look, I just saw today someone tweeted me the accomplishments that she had. And I mean, it is really, truly amazing some of the things she achieved this year. And to have like a legend like Swoops, just absolutely, it's mind boggling to see how, you know, like some people have really tried to turn this into a disaster, and I find it kind of frustrating. But that said, I've enjoyed watching the WNBA this year more than any year previously. I'm absolutely think Collier with the Lynx is one of my favorite players to ever watch play basketball. She's a fantastic player. She'll probably finish second in MVP voting. Just so much great talent in that league. And, you know, so we should be celebrating it, and these distractions on the side. Cheryl Swoops should be. I mean, that appearance on that podcast was a complete embarrassment, and it's a joke. for
well, her. But it's the Gilbert Arenas podcast. Like, have you ever heard the Gilbert Arenas podcast?
Yeah, unfortunately, I've seen a lot.
It's always an embarrassment. The Gilbert Arenas podcast is one of the like dumbest podcasts ever.
I mean, this person is getting paid to be a professional analyst, and she can't even provide facts.
Look, it's no different. Look, I'm going to take you back in time, and you'll remember this. Michael Jordan, when he was in the league early on, all there was like a bunch of comments about how Michael Jordan will never win a title. Like, you can't win a title with Michael Jordan. And people were crapping all over Michael Jordan, despite the fact that Michael Jordan was obviously the best player in the league. He was like selfish and he was like whatever. And it's not like a one-to-one comparison with Clark, and she's not Michael Jordan just yet, but it certainly isn't hard for us to see her being the Michael Jordan of the NBA. And certainly as a fan, at bringing fans into the league, she's having that type of impact. But like, even in that era, there's tons of people who are just crapping on Jordan. Like, people want to find a way to, you know, just trash everyone. And it just is what it is. Like, there's going to be people on both sides. Like, Clark, because she has the most coverage of any player by like a gazillion, right? We agree with that.
Well, yeah, no doubt. Because she's extremely popular.
Yeah, yeah. So she has the most coverage, is the most popular. She's brought the most fans. Her impact on the game is from the WNBA's perspective, is unmatched. But so if anyone who has that much coverage, there's just, you're going to form people who are on both sides of a thing. And they're both going to like, and like now everyone who didn't like Clark is like, whatever, they're walking back their comments like, oh yeah, she's really great, she's proven it, like whatever. Like, they, no one, it, but now the criticism is like shifted to like a slightly different thing. Like, well, she's not the best player ever, or, you know, like, you have to respect these other people, or the WNBA didn't need saving. And it's like, well, yeah, the NBA, maybe it didn't need saving in 1984 when Michael Jordan came in, but I'm sure the owners are super happy that he grew the league by like 3x. You know, like the NBA would still exist if Michael Jordan never existed, but it's sure a heck a lot better that it did. And the WNBA would have gone on without Caitlin Clark, but boy, like, you should be pretty thrilled you're getting like three times as much money as you were. And then, you know, whatever. So it just is what it is.
But
people will just take both sides, right? Like, you're just, so whatever happens, there's going to be people, like, the criticisms will now become like less minor because she's proven on the court. She's amazing. So now it won't be like, oh, wait till she sees WNBA players. Now it's going to be like, whatever, like these lesser things, you know, but they'll still just always be two sides of a thing. Whenever someone is so big and so popular, there's going to be two sides because people have to debate about it. And they want the clicks and they want the attention and they want the whatever. So you're going to have people who believe more and people who believe less, but there'll always be two sides. And both sides on the Clark thing, there's like a lot of just weird stuff with that one. I know we don't get time to unpack all of that, but that's all I would say, is it's like, you're going to have some idiots out there with someone just so dynamic and so popular and so amazing and just changing the league so much. You're just going to have some idiots on both sides of this thing. Like that take it too far and just say dumb things.
Yeah, fair enough. I'm just done dealing or answering idiots. I'm going to focus on basketball. I love watching the Lynx. Again, Collier is freaking awesome. And anybody who hasn't seen her play, you gotta check her out. And then check out the Fever and check out Caitlin Clark, because she's awesome. She's an awesome basketball player to watch. And
if
her
there's
team
any
is awesome.
Chance you are going to watch the WNBA, you've checked out Caitlin Clark.
Yeah. Like, I hope so.
If you haven't checked out Caitlin Clark, it just means you're just not going to watch, right? You're just out, like, which is fine. Like, I'm not saying you have to watch WNBA. I don't feel one way about the other. It's just, you spend your time and money on whatever you want. But if you have any interest, it's because of Clark, probably. If you didn't before and now you do, it's probably because of Clark. And you probably go not your wings.
All good.
Right? She's that type of player.
Well, let's bring the big red bus in. And until next time, I'm looking forward to next time. We'll hopefully have some Bulls news to discuss, as this has been a long off season. Until next time, let's go Bulls.
Go Bulls.